Dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantanilam, the most happening place on the planet. As we always say, and it is time for another episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. The time in the studios now is 8:40. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Today, what I have in store for this segment is something that we started some time ago. This is the month of April, the month which is so significant, the month which brings to us so many memories, the month which just compulsively makes us reflect, makes us go in. They say what is there in front of us and what is there behind us, what is there around us is nothing compared to what is there in us, within us. And this is the month that helps us, that propels us to make that inward journey. And if you have already made that journey, to ensure that this journey acquires momentum. Because this is the month when you remember him so fondly. As the Aradhana Day approaches, tears stream down your cheeks. And you think, what can I do to love my Swami more? The Swami that has done so much for me and continues to do so much for me. One day I remember during darshan time, one devotee called out. He said, Swami, I love you. Swami immediately stopped, turned, looked at her and said, love my message. It is one thing to like Swami. When we like someone, we like the way he dresses, we like the way he talks, or we like the way he conducts himself, or we like what he has achieved and so on. That is liking. But when we love someone, we become one with that person. We want to become one with that person. We love. When you like a rose, you pick up, you pluck the rose. But when you love the rose, you water that plant and you safeguard that rose. They say the best way to value the master is to master his values. So Bhagwan has taught us how we can love him. Sometime back we started this satsang called Radio Sai Vahini Series Study Circle. Because if we have to learn how to master his values, we have to get the values. And Bhagwan, in his infinite compassion for this age, he has himself written down his teachings. It is not coming through us via a sage or via a Valmiki or via a Vyasa. He himself penned and he himself wrote series of articles in the Sanatan Sarthi way back in 1958 when the Sanatan Sarthi started till 1984. Every month he wrote an article, and these are the articles which later were published as the books, as the Vahini series books. And we thought, what better way to understand and dwell and ruminate on Swami's teachings than take his own message, which has come to us in first person. Imagine if he had the Bhagavad Gita written by Krishna himself and not by a third party. Imagine if Lord Rama had written down his life story in his own handwriting. Or if Shirdi Sai had left a diary of his daily divine discussions in his darbar. We have Bhagwan telling us the essence of what we should be doing. What is the goal of our life? How we should lead life? in series of articles, Prema Vahini, Upanishad Vahini, Prashanti Vahini, Dhyana Vahini, Jnana Vahini, and so on. So sometime back we started this discussion on the Vahini series. We had the first episode and we started with Prema Vahini because this is what Swami started with, and he wrote for 25 months from February 1958 till February 1960. And we had the first discussion on the first chapter of Prema Vahini. And it was a very, very enriching experience, and we received good feedback also from listeners, and that has encouraged us to continue this series. So today, what you are going to have is the second episode of this discussion on Prema Vahini. So that is what we have in this last segment of Thursday Life, coming to you straight from the heart of Prashant and Lem.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Vishu. The time in the studio now is 8:47, and as I just mentioned, it's time to discuss Bhagwan's teachings. And today we take up the second episode, move on to the second episode of our discussion on the Vahini series. Like in the previous session, we have three brothers joining me in this discussion, Brother Sai Giridhar and K.M. Ganesh, who are from the university, and Brother Harishankar from the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, all of them former students and now working in his institutions. So we begin the second discussion session on Bhagwan's Prema Vahini.
Satyadevaya dhimahi tanna sarva prachodayat. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to this second session of our discussion on Bhagwan's Prema Vahini. In the first session that we had with our brothers from the university, Brother Sai Giridhar, Brother Ganesh, and Brother Harishankar from the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, we dwelt on the first four paragraphs that Bhagwan has written, where Bhagwan very clearly delineates what is the main problem that is facing mankind today. He gives a diagnosis of the problem, and then he goes on to explain the way to overcome all the restlessness that man is facing today. So Bhagwan begins in the first paragraph by saying that in this Kali age, there are so many ways to attain achievement, to attain success. If someone wants education, there are plenty of educational institutions, and if someone wants to earn money, there are so many avenues by which you can work hard and acquire wealth. But Swami says, in spite of all this, man today is beset with so many troubles and he has no peace and happiness. And this is something that we all are familiar with. Bhagwan then goes on to explain why is it so. And then he says, he reveals that it is because of man's behavior. And Swami says, Human birth is indeed the pinnacle of creation, and in order to live up to the sanctity of such an exalted human life, what is important is man's behavior. And to acquire such a behavior, such a pravartana, character is vital. Because character is what remains even after one's mortal body is gone into the elements. And Bhagwan then explains how character is strength and not power or money or our possessions. And he goes on to give examples, mention names of personalities like Buddha, Christ, Shankaracharya, Vivekananda and so on. And in the fourth paragraph, Bhagwan very clearly then lists out the different qualities that actually constitute character. So in today's discussion, what we will do is, we will dwell on these paragraphs 1.3 and 1.4, where Bhagwan explains very clearly what is character, gives examples, and also to help us understand, lists out the different virtues that comprise character. So let us begin by first listening to what Bhagwan has written, the translation of Bhagwan's original Prema Vahini in Telugu being read out by Brother Sunil.
1.3, quote, "Therefore, our character in daily life is our true strength. In this world, many consider knowledge to be the most powerful. That is not true. Character or gunam is strength. Without gunam, jnanam or wisdom cannot be obtained. Thus, one should have a perfect character or gunam. Why is it that Buddha, Christ, Shankaracharya, Vivekananda and such great saints and great devotees are remembered even till this day? It is because of swabhava and guna. In fact, wealth, knowledge and position, all of these are worthless before character or guna." Unquote.
So that is paragraph 1.3. And then in paragraph 1.4, as I was telling you, Bhagwan makes this more clear. So we'll listen to 1.42 and then we'll begin the discussion on what all this means for us and how we can practice this in our daily lives.
1.4, quote, "Character is like a flower that spreads fragrance wherever it may be. One may become a poet or a scholar or a scientist. Without character, there is no place for such an individual in society. One may wonder, do all the popular personalities today have character? Here I am not referring to such a society or character as it is thought in today's times, which is temporary and keeps changing. True character lasts till the end of one's life, nay, end of all ages. And such a permanent quality is ever associated with the Atma. What gives real value and worth to individuals are these immortal qualities like daya, dakshinyam or equally compassionate even to enemy, prema, trama, nijayati, justness and truthfulness, and patience. These confer greatness on individuals, not otherwise." Unquote.
So this is what Bhagwan very clearly tells us, what are the qualities that comprise character. But before that, Swami is telling us, character truly is strength and it is not power, it is not wealth or it is not the acquisition of any other position. So brothers, can we begin our discussion today by emphasizing on this? Do we all agree that in today's society today, character really is strength? Can we convince the younger generation of today that what will help you become successful in life is character? Because what you see outside is people who you think probably are not necessarily falling into the framework of what we think is character, but they are successful. So in this scenario, successful at least the way world considers them, the way the world perceives success. So how do we convince the students of today, the young entrepreneurs of today, the young professionals of today, that if you want to be successful, what is your true strength is character? What are your thoughts, brothers?
Bishud, my mind goes back to the days when we earned our degree out of, after our studies over here at Swami's Institute. During the convocation, we usually, if I compare this to the addresses that are given in other universities, so they normally invite a chief guest who normally gives a talk about the promise that the future holds for these very talented students, and that was the normal tone of the talk. But if you contrast it with Swami's benedictory address as the chancellor of the university, almost without fail, and I do remember Swami spoke about this in my convocation in 2002, Swami pointed out that our degrees, our academic successes, all of these really amounted to nothing. He said the purpose that all of you, having been students at this university, the purpose that you have to make out of your life is to gain what is most important, that is the knowledge of the Atma. So for Swami, the successes, the worldly successes, the trappings of success called fame or power, money, for Swami these really didn't amount to much, as the real character, as the real wealth that is there, that is one's own character. And
that is what is lasting.
That is lasting, and in fact, Swami goes on to give, I think the last time when we discussed, Swami gives these examples of why we remember personalities like Buddha, Jesus Christ, Shankaracharya. We are talking about people who lived maybe eons ago, centuries ago, and we remember them today, not only just remember them for their worldly exploits, but for what they represent. We have so much reverence for what they represent. And the reason that fragrance, as we speak, carries on even to today is because of the character that they possessed.
In fact, Bhagwan very beautifully also talks about Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. And in fact, I have a discourse clip where Bhagwan says how the qualities of Ramakrishna Paramahansa is what made him Ramakrishna Paramahansa, and why that fragrance is so vibrant even till this day.
ఎంతమంది లోకంలో జన్మించారు,
సో మెనీ ఆర్ బోర్న్,
ఎంత మహానుభావులో జీవించారు,
మెనీ నోబుల్స్
ఎన్ని ప్రబోధన ప్రచారంలో సలిపారు, కానీ
బట్
అందరి పేర్లు ఈ లోకంలో నిలవగలిగిందా?
డూ యూ ఫైండ్ దేర్ నేమ్ టుడే?
మీకు అందరికీ తెలుసు బాగా,
యూ ఆల్ నో ప్రిటీ వెల్,
కలకత్తా చాలా గొప్ప పెద్ద టౌన్,
కలకత్తా ఇస్ వెరీ బిగ్ సిటీ.
అలాంటి టౌన్ లోపల లాలా లజపతరాయి, బాల గంగాధర తిలక్, విపిన్ చంద్ర పాలు, రవీంద్రనాథ్ ఠాకూర్, ఇంకా అరవింద్ ఘోష్, వీళ్ళందరూ గొప్ప గొప్ప చదువులంతా కూడా పుట్టారు.
హైలీ ఎడ్యుకేటెడ్ గ్రేటెస్ట్ ఇంటలెక్చువల్స్ ఆఫ్ టైమ్ ఆర్ బోర్న్ దేర్ ఇన్ ది సిటీ ఆఫ్ కల్కత్తా.
కానీ వీళ్ళందరి పేర్లు ఎంతవరకు ప్రవేశించాయి?
బట్ వేర్ డు యు ఫైండ్ దేర్ నేమ్స్?
వీళ్ళందరి పేర్లు కొన్ని గ్రంథాల్లో మాత్రమే చేరిపోయినాయి.
యు ఫైండ్ దేర్ నేమ్స్ ఇన్ బుక్స్ ఓన్లీ.
ఏ చదువు చదవలేదు, ఏ ఏబీసీడీలు నేర్చుకోలేదు, ఏ ఓనామాలకులను రాయలేదు, తిద్దలేదు. అలాంటి రామకృష్ణ పరమహంస పేరు అందరి హృదయాల్లోనూ నిలిచిపోయింది.
వేరస్ రామకృష్ణ పరమహంస హూ డిడ్ హ్యావ్ ఎనీ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ ఫార్మల్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్, నాట్ ఈవెన్ ద నాలెడ్జ్ ఆఫ్
అల్ఫాబెట్, చదువుల పేర్లు పుస్తకాల్లో చేరిపోయినాయి.
And those that have learnt are confined to the books alone.
కానీ పవిత్రమైన హృదయం కలిగినటువంటి రామకృష్ణ పరమహంస యొక్క పేరు అందరి హృదయాల్లో కూడా జీవిత పర్యంతం కూడా నిలిచిపోయినాయి.
Whereas the name of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa is imprinted on the heart of everybody.
అందరి హృదయాల్లో ప్రవేశించాలి గాని గ్రంథాల్లో ప్రవేశించే ప్రయోజనం ఏమిటి?
Therefore we should enter into the heart and not into the book.
మన యొక్క పేర్లు గ్రంథాల్లో ప్రవేశించనక్కర్లేదు.
Our names need not be there in books.
మన గ్రంథము గంధము మన హృదయమే.
గ్రంథ ద టెక్స్ట్ గంధ ద ఫ్రాగ్రెన్స్ ఇస్ అవర్ హార్ట్.
అందులో ప్రవేశించాలి.
గెట్ ఇన్.
అందరూ కూడా ఆహా మహానుభావుడు అని అతని యొక్క ఆదర్శాలను దీంతో ప్రాక్టికల్ లో పెట్టాలి.
యూ షుడ్ విన్ ఆల్ ది క్లెయిమ్ అండ్ ది ప్రైజ్ సో దట్ దే వుడ్ ఫాలో యూ లేటర్.
కనుకనే చదువుతో పాటు సంస్కారం కూడా మీరు కొంతవరకు తీర్చిదిద్దుకోవాలి.
దేర్ఫోర్ అలాంగ్ విత్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్ దిస్ రిఫైన్మెంట్ ఈజ్ ఆల్సో నెసెసరీ.
సో ఐ థింక్ దట్ సార్ట్ ఆఫ్ gives a very beautiful example of what you mentioned, where Swami is saying, you might be there in the books, but what is important for someone is not to rule the books, but rule the hearts. And that is where you have the example of Ramakrishna Paramahansa. And what a legacy. If you see what Ramakrishna Paramahansa has left and the work that goes on, just see the work of Swami Vivekananda. And I remember one of the virtues that Swami talks about is of the person who has character is daya, which is compassion. And when I was reading the biography of Swami Vivekananda, after he gave that historic address in Chicago, in the Parliament of Religions, you know, everyone was wondering how is he reacting to all the adulation that he received after that. How was he taking the status of a celebrity that had just come upon him? And what was his relationship with now with the other monks? You know, what is his attitude to life? Everyone was wondering about it. And when I read what was going on in Swami Vivekananda's mind that night, it really shocked me. Because here is a monk who had a solitary life and now he was suddenly, you know, pulled into this vortex of public career with so much of demand and everyone is calling him to give talk. And he returned to the hotel that night as a big star. And he says that when he was back on his bed that night, he just could not sleep on the bed. He just came down on the floor and he started weeping like a child, Swami Vivekananda. Because that lavish hospitality that was being served to him, that only made him sick. It made him sick at heart when he remembered the crushing poverty of his own people. His anguish became so intense that that night he just rolled on the floor and he was groaning and crying, "Oh mother, what do I care for name and fame when my motherland remains sunk in utmost poverty? To what a sad pass have we poor Indians come when millions of us die for want of a handful of rice and here they spend millions of rupees upon their personal comfort. Who will raise the masses of India? Who will give them bread? Show me, oh mother, how can I help them?" This was his anguish. And I felt, what a phenomenal blessing. When you have one Ramakrishna like that, we have seen one Vivekananda, and today when we think about it, we have Bhagwan who has ignited this in so many hearts. In so many hearts.
Brother Bishu, I would like to share one anguish which I have, and I believe most of us have, is why is it that I do not feel that urgent need or the yearning to develop character? For example, all these good qualities we are talking about when we are reading Swami's discourse, when we are listening to a study circle, when we are doing satsang, yes, I feel very motivated and I feel very good. But somehow, I also am painfully aware that I am not having that yearning, that burning desire, because Vivekananda had that desire, Yogananda Paramahamsa had that desire. All these saints, they had a burning desire. Okay, how do we get that burning desire? Because without that burning desire, this remains at a discussion level, and as Swami goes on to say in this chapter also, if you just read for the sake of reading,
yes,
it remains just
yes,
a waste of time.
Absolutely.
So I'm not definitely not saying that this is waste of time, because everything starts with listening. But the paradox is, after knowing, after understanding, even after, you know, sort of realizing the value of it, but still it has not gone deep into the realization, because I don't find that continuous yearning to the striving which is required to reach that state. So my question is that, and I believe most of the youth have the same issue in their mind. Why is it that they again and again get, there's a continuous tug of war between the worldly attractions and also the noble, you know, qualities and the character building, what Swami is, something which is very dear to Swami. So on one side we want Swami, like yesterday's speaker in Kulwanthal said, how to be with Swami, that was the title of his talk. So on other side it is again the world. So this paradoxical tug of war is going on. So how do I get that yearning? So once for all I get rid of this.
True. Well, two thoughts come to my mind, Ganesh. One is here in this first chapter itself, Bhagwan is very clearly saying that human birth is indeed the pinnacle of creation.
Okay.
And in order to live up to the sanctity of such an exalted human life, what is needed is this pravartana. So one thing is, I remember now, you know, in our student days, Bhagwan used to mention in the discourses that what is your life meant for? Is it only for eating, drinking and sleeping and, you know, merrymaking? And Swami would always say, then how are you different from
animals?
From animals.
Yeah.
Actually, when I was a student, to be frankly to tell you, I used to get, Swami, come on, how can you compare us with an animal? I mean, we are doing a million things that animal cannot do. I mean, we're not just eating and sleeping. You know, I can operate a mobile phone. I can do so many things. Can an animal do that? How can you comparing? But today, actually, you know what? This one actually hits back. Because what is that animal doing? He's ultimately, it's all the time wanting to just satisfy one need. It just wants to satisfy that hunger. It wants to, you know, it is just only fulfilling its basic needs. And what you're doing is, you're sophisticatedly fulfilling the basic needs. Yeah, you're struggling, but ultimately you're struggling just to feed your hunger and probably sleep in a better bed and, you know, probably travel in a better car.
So the refinement is taking in those aspects.
But in fact,
if I could add, you know, actually part of the answer lies in what Swami is saying in this next paragraph. Swami first of all says that we actually live in a society that honors things like knowledge, wealth, money more than character itself. So youth, you know, we live in a society that in which we are actually taught to think in that direction.
Yes.
They are given recognitions.
Yeah, yeah. And naturally, you know, Ganesh, what as a youth, you'd naturally try to win that respect of the peers around you.
Yes.
So if what they value is money, then naturally you are trained, your mind is trained to actually go for that in order to win their approval.
That's the natural conditioning of the society.
That is the conditioning that society gives you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is one aspect of that. There's another aspect which Swami talks about over here. He says that this character comes out of a permanent qualities which are associated with the Atma.
Yes.
So there are like two different aspects over here. One is, there is a persona called Ganesh. Right? And that is conditioned by society, conditioned by his parents, by the experiences that he has. And there is this persona called Ganesh, and which has its own desires, its own appetites. And based on that, that persona called Ganesh has this doubt. You know, should I satisfy the desires of this aspect of me, which has desires and appetites, which is what we look at in the common world, right? But Swami is saying that there is something beyond the persona of Ganesh, which is eternal, which is the Atma, which remains unrecognized. And all the characters which we really value, which are embodied by people like Jesus, Buddha, they come from that source of the Atma. Whereas the trappings of fame, of wealth, etc., which we speak about in society, they are traced back to the persona of Ganesh or the persona of Hari Shankar.
Yes.
All can be traced back to that.
I think it's absolutely wonderful that Hari Brother had mentioned this, because one such personality who had an extraordinary character from the epics I remember is the personality of Draupadi, the Pandava queen. And I mean, what a personality she should be, that the avatar himself, at that time as Krishna, was her sakha, that is her best friend. And in this avatar as Satyasai, has praised her so much, and he himself has penned down a poem in her praise, which kind of gives us both a direction and also a clear recognition of what Hari has just pointed out. You know, Swami's poem on Draupadi goes thus. Swami writes, Patula paluma telaku yeduru cheppanga bodu vari sevalu cheyaga teeradanadu tanaku unnadanito tripti ganachunundu Draupadi ki saatiye pativratayu ledu. These four lines which Swami has written has got such in-depth meaning. You know, here Swami says, Patula palumatalaku yaduru cheppanga bodu. That's the first line. She never answers back, you know, when her husbands speak to her or when they communicate to her something and give her some directions, she never answers back. She might reason with them, but once the decision is taken by them, she never answers back. Patula palumatalaku, whatever is spoken by her husbands, yeduru chappanga bozu, she will never counter it. You know, there is an inner meaning to this. If Draupadi is to be taken as our mind, and Swami says the mind's husband is the Atma. So, whenever the voice of conscience prompts us to do something in a particular way, we must never counter that idea. We must learn to accept that, knowing very well that it is a selfless idea which is coming for my welfare or for the world's welfare. So, one should not counter that. Vari sevalu cheyaga tiradanadu is the second line which Swami writes, and it means that Draupadi was tirelessly serving her husbands. She was never ever tired, you know, or she never ever complained that the work is too much or the workload is too much. Tirelessly served her husband, which again in terms of her inner view reflects that our entire life should be dedicated to a sense of selfless service or putting into action the voice of the conscience. That is, whatever conscience dictates to us, the body and the mind should follow their master, which is the conscience, implicitly all our life. That kind of a selfless, tireless service is kind of the purpose of human life itself. Tanaku unna danito tripti ganachunundu. Draupadi was extremely contented and very, very happy with whatever she got. Let us not forget here that she was from one of the greatest kingdoms in the Bharatvarsha of those times, and she was a princess of that kingdom. Yet when she was banished to the forest because of the game of dice and her husband's decisions, you know, she never complained. Every moment of her life, she owned it up with joy, with the idea that whatever is happening to me is a gift of God. So if our life also can become in this way, where we listen to our conscience, we serve the voice of our conscience, and we do not complain with whatever we encounter in our life, with the firm faith and conviction that it is happening to us as a gift of God, then such a character like that of Draupadi is possible, feasible and real here and now.
Wow. In fact, as a commentary on what you just said, what we began with during this discussion is where we said that Swami values the character or the acquisition of Atmajnana,
yes,
more than the acquisitions of wealth or knowledge or fame, right? And at the same time, from what he said, that we need to have an attitude where our eyes are set upon this very Atma all the time. Like, we should be serving the Atma tirelessly, and all our sadhana, all our efforts should be directed towards this particular Atma, this Atma Jnana that we want to acquire. And in fact, Swami, in the previous paragraph, he does say this: without gunam, jnanam cannot be obtained.
Yes.
It is a very clear thing. So, if you want to summarize this in one sentence, the acquisition of character is important to such a person who has his eyes set on acquiring Atma Jnana. It should be seen as very vital to him that he is not satisfied with merely being a human being, as you said, with all the appetites and desires of an animal. But if he is looking to evolve to a higher state, that would be, as Swami points out, a very important impeller towards, yes, acquisition of value.
So what would be the first step in that?
Yeah, the first step, as you say, see, the thing is, Swami often has spoken about how wealth, how fame, how power, none of these actually lead to lasting happiness.
Yes.
And in fact, many people who do reach there, as a youth, when you're looking forward, when you look up to a person who has wealth, and you say that, okay, let me dedicate my life to acquiring this wealth, because that would bring meaning to my life. And then you spend about 40, 50 years, you're standing with a huge bank balance and a large house standing against your name. And yet, you have this gnawing question inside you, is this all there is? Right? And that is what we can transmit to the youth. The experience that maybe more people senior to that person who have gone through life, they can see, you know, sow the seeds of this kind of thinking. But it is not a guarantee, Ganesh. Somehow if you are looking
because
for that...
Because in the pursuit of things that money can buy,
yeah.
we miss to gather to things that money cannot buy.
Yeah, being is lost in becoming, as they say.
Yeah, I completely agree with Hari. But there's one more way of looking at it. See, a person who's sitting on the chair, he may be meditating or he may be sleeping.
Right.
Okay. So from a third person point of view, if he sees he's meditating, it's a very sattvic activity. Okay, but if he's sleeping, it's a tamasic activity. So there's a very thin line between what appears to be sattvic and what is probably tamasic. So what I want to say is, in all this aspiration for wealth and fame, it is fine until unless, I mean, if you're not losing sight of the main goal,
right.
that is spirituality, which is the source of lasting happiness, we should never lose sight of that.
Exactly. And in fact... The other thing also what I want to add here, brothers, is many times, you know, we actually get so carried away by what we see outside.
Hmm.
We think that, you know, a person who is driving an expensive car is actually very happy.
Yeah.
You know, we think that a person who is living in the mansion is leading a very, very contented and luxurious life, and the person who doesn't have that is actually, you know, leading a miserable life.
Right.
But it may not be true all the time. Because, you know, I remember this... a scene from the Mahabharata where all the five brothers who are in the forest and undergoing this exile, on one occasion they have this fruits and roots to eat. So one of the brothers collects all this and, you know, they are all sitting under a tree. And they see that Mother Kunti is actually very unhappy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's unhappy that, you know, here are my such valorous sons and, you know, today they are there on the earth. They should be there on silk robes, on cots. And what has my fate come to? And all the brothers can see that Mother is unhappy. And so suddenly Arjuna says, Mother, you know what? First time when we went to the palace, there is one way Bhishma, our grandsire, told us to have our meals. He said that today... all the brothers, because both Pandavas and Kauravas, because Bhishma had seen that there is this difference of attitude and lack of harmony between the brothers, and he was thinking of ways and means how to bring them together. So he said, today everyone is going to have meal, but without bending their elbow. Okay, and he said, so let's start. And so obviously no one was able to have food. And then what happened was, after a while, the Pandavas began to have food because they were able to eat without bending their elbow because they were using the hand to feed the other.
Each other. Very nice.
And not themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Pandavas are so beautiful in their character that, you know, they fed each other as well as the Kauravas. You have Duryodhana being fed by Yudhishthira. You have Nakula being feeding Dushasana and so on. But the Kauravas are feeling very diffident to do it. But that is the way the whole lesson of unity was being conveyed by Bhishma. And here Arjuna says, Mother, I remember when first time when we went to the palace, this is how Bhishma told us that we should have food. And this is how we sorted out the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very beautiful thing to do. Shall we do that today also? And that day, you know, each one takes the food and feeds the other. And all of them feed the mother. And you know, if you see that scene, there is so much of happiness, there is so much of contentment, there is so much joy, so much of satisfaction. You know, I felt that, you know, who says that, you know, they are leading miserable lives? Because you will think the Kauravas are actually leading, I would think that, you know, I don't mind leading, if you call that as a miserable life, I don't mind leading a life like that where all the brothers are huddled in such warmth and love, even if you have to stay on earth. Instead of sleeping
palace.
On silk robes, but you're constantly living in fear and
right.
living in insecurity.
Right.
And this incident also speaks about the character of the Pandavas, and we know what happened later.
Yes.
Yeah. Bishu, I think what the point that Ganesh was trying to make was essentially there may be nothing wrong in, you know, the pursuit of wealth, for example. Right? And one wants to earn more money. Inherently, there is nothing wrong with it. Right? And in fact, I think what he was cautioning was escaping from one's responsibility to earn money, say for one's family or for oneself, in the name of spiritual pursuits. Right? It may happen sometime that the perversion of the mind leads us to justify our not taking up efforts right, to lead our lives in the name of spiritual sadhana.
As Gandhiji used to say, sacrifice is not for the weak. Only a strong person can sacrifice.
And Vivekananda also told, spirituality is not for a hungry stomach.
Yes, it's there. Exactly.
In fact, I think spirituality and pursuit of wealth need not be opposite poles, really.
Absolutely.
Because our own Sanatan Dharma, and Swami has reiterated this many times, what is called the purusharthas, have to be understood in the right sense. In fact, in the Sanatan Dharma, that is the way the seers, the sages of the ancient Bharat have looked at life from their own experiential learning. They were not, you know, textbook learners. They were people who, from their direct experience of life, made inferences, and hence extremely practical inferences. And they were very clear in stating that, you know, we are all spiritual beings having a human experience.
Right.
And hence, the way we look at the goals of life itself needs to be little different. And these four terms, that is dharma, artha, kama, moksha, are the four purusharthas which have been given to us.
Can you tell what is purushartha? What is the meaning of purushartha?
The simple meaning of purushartha is, if you have a goal in mind, to put a determined effort to achieve that goal is purushartha. That is the simple meaning.
The ability that a human being has to put an effort is
to
called
put
a purushartha.
An effort, a deliberate, like how you are, you know, what you are saying, a conscious, deliberate effort to achieve a particular goal.
Yes.
See, that is purushartha.
That is purushartha.
But then, one has to understand on what lines, right? So, dharma, artha, kama, moksha gives us a direction in which that effort should be made. For what? The purpose of, or the goal of life, as the rishis have elaborated and Swami has often quoted in his discourse, is very simple. The Upanishad says, Atyanta Dukkha Nivritti Paramananda Prapti, which simply translates into, to get rid of all sufferings in life. Hmm. See, at the end of the day, our discussion is also that, you know, how to be happy, right?
Yes.
How to get rid of all sufferings in life.
Yes.
There are various kinds of tapas in life, and how do you get rid of them? That is one primary goal which everybody understands. It's not very complex that way. The other thing is Paramananda Prapti. Paramananda Prapti is to experience transcendental bliss, is one way of putting it. The other way of looking at it is to transcend the cycle of birth and death itself. So, Atyanta Dukkha Nivritti, that is to get rid of all sufferings in life, and Paramananda Prapti, to be eternally blissful. And that is what man is always striving for. In the context of this goal, the sages, by their practical experience, have laid down dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It's interesting, I came across a wonderful definition of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, more in practical day-to-day life, you know, terms. Dharma also means dharana. They all come from the same dhatu, like dharti, dharma, dharana, all come from a Sanskrit root called dhru.
Yes.
Dhru means determination. Dhru means dhridata, that is firmness, steadiness, firmness. So this dharana means, out of the many thoughts that emerge in our mind, to pick and select with discrimination good thoughts, noble thoughts and feelings, and to dharan karana means to uphold them or to
hold on to it.
Hold on to them with determination is the primary dharma in a very practical term. The second purushartha is artha. The artha has also got a beautiful, in a Sanskrit presentation of artha. This artha means, jisko dharan kiya, usko sarthak karna, which means, the good thoughts, the noble feelings that I have entertained, I have upheld in my life, I have to put it into practice or manifest them, concretize them.
Mm-hmm. And make them meaningful.
Make it meaningful in a practical.
Practical.
That is, I have to manifest them.
Manifest it outside.
Through practice in day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is, these noble thoughts, these noble intentions, which I have taken up, can be manifested only with some amount of means also. Means are important. Those means are called what we call as wealth, money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have to earn wealth in order to manifest the good thoughts and feelings we have entertained.
Wonderful.
The excess of wealth also the scriptures talk about, and they say that whatever is there in excess, you must give it to those who are in need. But it is important to understand in the context again of the goal of life, that is to overcome the cycle of, get out of the cycle of birth and death. We should never give it with a feeling that, okay, I'm giving 10 rupees to this person so that I get back 100 rupees in return. Because the universe is reflection, reaction, reason. Very clearly the sages and seers have said that this kind of a charity which we do should be with nishkama bhava. That is, there should be no desire behind such offering.
No expectations.
No expectations. That is the artha. Kama, the seers have made it very clear. This is not with reference to desires or kama vasana as it's usually, you know, understood. Many people have written about this in elaborate ways. But if one pays attention to Bhagavan's discourses and also the words of the sages and the seers of this great nation, they are very clear in saying, this kama means desire for mahanta, that is, to be a great, extraordinary person. That kind of a desire one should entertain in life.
Yes.
When we say a great, extraordinary person, we are not talking about the richness that we just discussed right now, but it is about being a person of character.
Yes.
Being a person who flourishes and who establishes himself as an epitome in his field. You know, like Mahatma Gandhi, like, you know, from the ancient epics, Arjuna. You know, that kind of a noble desire to be on top of the world with pristine character is the desire that is described when they said kama. And you can see that in Sanatana Dharma, all the kings, take Dasharatha or Janaka, all those kings were epitomes of this kind of a desire, to be a great personality of character.
Stand for a value.
Stand for a value. And they epitomized that value. That is what is the desire. And final is moksha. In the usual terms, again, moksha is referred to as liberation, that is leaving the body and, you know, merging into divinity and all. But Bhagavan says there is a parama purushartha, which is the ultimate goal of life, which is even as you are living.
Yes.
Swami says the purpose of life is when even as you are born, you should never be born again. Even when you die, you should never die again. That is the purpose of life. This moksha represents this purpose.
Yes.
Where in your living tenure, you recognize that I am not this body, just like Raja Janaka, who was called Videha because in his living tenure, in the human form, he recognized or realized that I am not this body and mind, and hence he was separate from the body. Videha means not the body, or he was separate from the body. That kind of a jivan mukta sthiti or status was attained by him by the grace of Sadguru, and that is what really moksha means. Moksha means videha mukti. It doesn't refer to a post-mortem state, if I can put it that way. It means that in my living tenure, I should recognize that I am the self-atma, which is unshakable, which is eternal, pristine, and I am not this ephemeral body and mind. So, the sages and seers have pretty much put everything in context for us.
Yes. In fact, you know, even as you say this, I'm only reminded of the beautiful, very simplistic definition of understanding of purusharthas, which Bhagavan has explained time and again, and I think it is worth reiterating it.
Yeah.
Because I think all of us in the world today are in pursuit of these purusharthas, and if only we know how to do it, and the right way to do it, and the right direction, perhaps, you know, we will not realize this after 50 years or 60 years after being there and done that. You know, if you realize that much early in life, probably there will be much more happiness as we make this journey. And dharma, artha, kama and moksha, where Swami very clearly says, dharma and artha are intertwined. All the artha that you earn, the money that you earn, the resources that you amass, it should be done in the dharmic way. And we know dharma is the basis of this world. We discussed the story of Prahlada last time where, you know, when dharma went, Prahlada said, you know, what will happen? Anybody else can go, but dharma cannot.
Dharma should not leave.
Dharma should not leave. And the Lord comes down for dharma sansthapana. So, Swami says dharma and artha are intertwined. And then you have kama and moksha. So all our desires should be, whatever our wishes are, it should be only towards that ultimate goal. That doesn't mean that, you know, you have to not have the regular means of carrying on a comfortable life. But the ultimate goal should be to reach moksha. And in fact, other day when I was reading another discourse, when Bhagwan very clearly, when he mentioned about the fifth purushartha, Swami said, there is a fifth purushartha. And Swami said, that is parama prema. Swami said. In one discourse, Swami said, parama prema, that is the fifth purusharta, that is the ultimate. And in fact, that is what is moksha.
In fact, if we look at these four purusharthas, most of us, though, we are trapped in the cycle of artha and kama. Okay, you earn money to satisfy your desire.
Yeah.
And you have more desire, so you want to earn more money. So we have forgotten the dharma aspect and the moksha aspect.
Yeah.
The first thing, that's why the order in which the ancestors have also stated, dharma, first comes dharma. And through dharmically you have earned the money. With that money you should have the desires which again fall under the set of, what is it called, dharma. It should be under the umbrella of dharma. And obviously if you have, dharma is what gives meaning to the life.
Yes.
Because the ultimate goal again is moksha. But if you forget dharma and moksha, you are trapped in the vicious cycle of artha and kama which goes on and on. And obviously the happiness is eluding you.
Exactly, Ganesh. In fact, I know of so many people, you know, they want to have a material position because they're saying, what do we do with so much money? You know, they are earning so much money. So, okay, you end up buying something, you know, you have so much money, okay, buy a land.
Mm.
Okay, then buy a flat because you have so much money. When you mentioned...
They've gone into a cycle.
In his discourse series on Ramayana, I'm not very sure which summer course it was, but in his discourse series on Ramayana, Swami very clearly talks about this and he gives the difference between Rama and Ravana.
Mm-hmm.
As two people who have, either practiced these purusharthas well or misunderstood them. Like he said, for Rama, the foundation was dharma. In artha, kama and moksha also.
Yes.
And hence, you know who is Rama. He is worshipped after 20,000 years.
Yeah.
But for somebody like Ravana, for him, he forgot dharma, but focused only on artha and kama.
Yes.
And hence the result that he met with at the end, you know.
Okay.
So Swami says that if you focus only on artha and kama, the result is well known.
Yes.
These are all, see, when we look at these epics, the way we need to look at them is, they are life experiences of certain individuals. And their life has taught us a lesson.
Yes.
I mean, we have to be equally grateful to Ravana because his life has taught us a lesson that if you focus only on artha and kama, not understanding what they really mean, what happens to you is presented to you.
Yes.
You know, and this is a common experience only if you pay little attention to what's going around,
Absolutely.
Going on around us.
So it becomes imperative that we should definitely delve into what dharma is. You know, that dharma, delving onto dharma gives meaning to life.
Yes.
Without delving deep into it, we just live a mechanical life of just getting trapped between AK, that is artha and kama.
Yes, absolutely.
There is actually a story which is like, there was this father in a desert kind of a setting and he was on his deathbed and he had three children and he wrote his will, giving away his property to his children, and very soon he passed away. The children then summoned the local village, panchayat head and all that, to go through the will and see what he has left for them. And very soon the scene was of utter chaos and confusion in that place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth can very easily do that, we all know.
Yes.
Isn't it? So that was the scene, and there walks a wise man with his camel. And he comes there into the scene and he reviews the whole thing. And he's wondering, why are they fighting like this? You know, why is there so much chaos? And he inquires. So they say that the old man who passed away had left a certain amount of property for his children. And, he had written in his will that 50% should go to his eldest son. One-fourth should go to his middle son, the second son. And one-fifth should go to his daughter, who was his third child. This was the distribution he had written in his will. Then the wise man asked, what is the problem? You just divide it like this. Are they opposing to this distribution or something? They said, no, no, no. They are fine with the ratios, but it is impossible to do this distributions. So then he understood why it was impossible. All the property that the old man had were 19 camels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 50% was to be given to the first eldest son. Right? How do you divide 19 camels by 2? It's impossible.
Yes.
Right? Neither can you divide it by 1/4 nor 1/5. So they were caught up in this confusion and they did not know what to do. The wise man said, don't worry, I'll give you a solution. You take my camel and add it to the lot. Now you divide. So they added that one and made it 20. 50% was given to the eldest son, which was 10 camels. 1/4 was given to the second son, which was 5 camels. 1/5 was given to the daughter, which were 4 camels. 10 plus 5 plus 4, 19. And the wise man took back his camel.
Wow.
You know, and walked away.
Amazing.
You know, this story I happened to narrate in the Atirudra event which happened in Chennai. So after the talk that evening, when we went back to Sundaram, you know, there were some elders who were discussing this story over dinner in Bhagavan's presence.
In 2007.
In 2007. And Swami asked a simple question. Oh, you like this story so much. What did you understand from it? You know? So immediately, they didn't expect that question. So the devotee just mumbled and he said, Swami, it's just that, you know, they were able to divide. It's impossible to divide 19 by 2. But by adding that 1, that whole ratio was possible. Swami said, kadu, kadu, not this. Swami said, if you do not add that 1 to the lot, it is meaningless.
Yes.
It seems to be utterly chaotic. It is meaningless. Swami said, only when you add that 1 to the lot, the whole situation gains meaning. Swami said, in the same way, our life too is in utter chaos and confusion because we don't understand the mathematics of nature.
Yes.
We don't understand the mathematics of God's creation and what's happening to our lives. But Swami has given a simple formula. He says, this one is the Atma. This one is God. Make him the center of your life. Add that one to your life in a big, big way. Then you see, everything will just fizzle out. All chaotic situations will fizzle out. And there will be absolute peace and absolute happiness that will prevail. So Swami said, "Aa okati add chestene daniki viluvura," he says.
Yes.
Value is gained by life only when you focus on this one. Or when this one becomes the central aspect of our life.
Wow.
Else it is all chaos and confusion.
Life with Swami, life with God is endless hope, and life without Swami, without God is hopeless end. Wonderful. So perhaps we'll have to end our session today because time is running out with this beautiful thought. But I think it was a discussion where we were able to at least share what should be the goal of our life, what should be the center of our life, and character is connected to that because Swami's in the fourth paragraph, what we saw, 1.4, Swami is very clearly saying character is that which is associated with the Atma. And reaching that Atma, that self, is what is the goal of life. And all our endeavors should be towards that. And Bhagavan begins this chapter by saying that the human birth is meant for that. And I think that sort of gives some clarity to what Ganesh raised. A very beautiful, important point that Brother Ganesh raised and gave direction to our discussion session today. We didn't really dwell on the different virtues that Bhagwan delineated, and perhaps by Bhagwan's grace in the next session we will try and take each of these virtues that Bhagwan mentioned, Daya, Dakshanyam, Prema, Kshama, Nijayati and Patience, and see how we can implement them in our lives so that it will help us to build our character brick by brick, virtue by virtue, incident by incident, by His grace. Thank you so much, brothers, for coming over to the studios and for this beautiful session with Swami, session with the Sat, this beautiful Vahini Satsang. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brothers.
Thank you, brother Saira.
Samasta loka sukhino bhavantu, samasta loka sukhino bhavantu, samasta loka sukhino bhavantu. Om shanti shanti shanti.
So that brings us to the end of the second session of Radio Sai Vahini series study circle. I hope you found this useful. Please feel free to share your comments and suggestions. The brothers who were there in this discussion are Sai Giridhar and K.M. Ganesh from the university and Brother Hari Shankar from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. We hope and pray to Bhagwan that He guides us as we continue this satsang session on the Prema Vahini. There is nothing that gives us more happiness and more joy than dwelling on the message that Bhagwan has given and taking the message right from the source in its purest form. This is what will add meaning to our life. This is what perhaps will bring a smile on His face. And this is what will make our lives sacred, our lives an offering to the Lord. Loving the Lord is living His message. Let us use every opportunity that we have, every second, every ounce of energy that we have in loving Him in this manner, so that once we are done, we can look up to Lord and say, "Dearest one, I have used every bit of energy, every ounce of my talent that you have given in serving you, in seeing you, in living your message in my life." With this prayer and with this beautiful thought, it's time to take leave. Thank you so much for being with us throughout the day, this lovely Thursday, on this Thursday Live programs from the studios. Even as I sign off, at 10 o'clock you will listen to a drama presented by Balvikas children and youth from Bihar and Jharkhand. This was presented in front of Bhagwan on 14th March 2009 and it's entitled Chaitanyam. So this will start at 10 o'clock. Keep listening, keep immersing yourself in His love and in His beautiful message. Let us make our lives His message. Thank you so much. A sweet goodbye and loving Sairam from Prashant Thiralayam.